I'm Brian Seaman, and you're listening to The Lob, The Jam, The Podcast.
What's up, everyone? It's The Lob, The Jam, The Podcast. I'm Siobhan, coming to you, as always, with Rob. How's it going, Rob?
Chap, I think that was too enthusiastic of an intro, considering what happened today.
I'm on autopilot, Rob.
Unlike the Clippers, maybe Ty Lue.
Yeah, it might be like Ty Lue. We're also here with Lucas. What's up, Lucas?
You know, it is what it is, man.
It truly is what it is. The Clippers lost today 112-100 to the Phoenix Suns, going down 3-1 in their best of seven series, going back to Phoenix. Kawhi Leonard did not play today. Paul George did not play today. And the Clippers lost. It was spirited. They very briefly got up to start the second half, up 6, I want to say, out the gate after being down 1. Russell
they were up
Westbrook,
8, actually.
Oh, man, they were up 8. Russell Westbrook was great today. He was 17-29 from the field for 37-6-4. And 4 turnovers, really did the best he could. Was that high usage, high volume, low efficiency sponge that you would expect Russell Westbrook to do when the next best player is Norman Powell? Norman Powell, however, was visibly not quite there. He got his fifth foul. He was in foul problems a good chunk of this game. He was 4-for-15, 14 points, and he was the next leading scorer. And that kind of goes to show you how the Clippers manufactured their offense, only scoring 100 points. Terrence Mann had 13 points. Eric Gordon had 10, surprisingly, actually, but he had 10 points. The Phoenix Suns were led by Devin Booker and Kevin Durant, as per usual, with Chris Paul putting on the finishing touches in Los Angeles once again. Rob, how are you doing? How are you feeling about this game?
It's tough. I mean, it's really tough to talk about these games when the Clippers don't have Kawhi and Paul George, because we want to nitpick, you want to say, like, Ty Lue's rotations, and I'm sure we will talk a lot about Ty Lue's rotations. You want to talk about the refereeing, and complain about that, and there is some truth to both those things. But at the end of the day, they're down their two best players in a best-of-seven game series against a more or less healthy Suns team. They're down their backup point guard in Campaign, who is a nice bench player, but more or less healthy. And it's just, like, it's tough. I mean, like, would they have won this game with slightly better rotations, you know, with maybe slightly more favorable refereeing? Probably not. I mean, maybe, but probably not, honestly. I hate to sound like, you know, one of those parents of, like, a third grade basketball team, like, everybody tried their best. The Clippers really have fought really hard. They have played really hard. And all things considered, like, they've played well. Like, the shooting has just not been there at all for most of these players. And, like, it is what it is. It's unfortunate, but, like, the Suns have been playing solid defense except at the point of attack on Russ. I don't know if it's they just cannot stay in front of him, don't want to, or find just conceding stuff to him as long as he can't get anybody else going. I don't know if that's, like, a conscious part of their game plan
or what. They're slow, like the Clippers.
Like, you look at, like, the designated guy on Russ, you know, is sometimes Torrey Craig, which is, like, not, I mean, Torrey Craig is a fine defender, but, like, in terms of a point of attack on a quick, like, that's not who your, like, favorite option. And then in the fourth quarter, they switched Devin Booker onto him, which, like, you know, congrats to Devin Booker for, like, being like, I want to take that challenge late in a playoff game. But that's, you know, that's not to take away at all from how great Russ was in this game, of course. But, like, yeah, the Suns just aren't equipped for that. I'm going to be really interested to see how the Suns handle Jamal Murray if they ended up getting that matchup in the second
round. I can
round.
Tell you how they're going to handle it, and it's going to be a lot of wide open Jamal Murray shots.
Yeah, Murray's playing well. Good for Jamal Murray, a fellow ACL recovery friend. Kawhi Leonard didn't get the best news from Chris Haynes today on the Chris Haynes report. Kind of a little bit pessimistic about Kawhi's possible return and an injury that, you know, we were all blindsided by that occurred in game one. Not going to talk too much about that because really, I think Clipper fans should probably just assume that he's not guys aren't coming back. So
they wouldn't be sounding this depressed about it if they thought he was realistically coming back.
Yeah,
I would be quite surprised if he came back 3-1 on the road.
If they had won this game, you know, I think it really leaves that door open, whether it's Tuesday for game 5 or Thursday for game 6, because even if you go down 3-2, you think, hey, we've been really competitive. We get Kawhi back for 2 games. But, you know, again, if they go on the road and win game 5 without Kawhi, then you're right back to like starting thinking about, you know, Kawhi and Paul and where their timelines are heading into Thursday. But I would be surprised if we see either of them on Tuesday.
Lucas, how did you feel about this game today?
Yeah, I mean, I think Rob is right. Like, I think that the Clippers in both of these 2 games, games 3 and 4, they played hard. They played well. They did interesting things. They gave the Suns different looks. They took a bunch of punches from two of the best individual scorers in basketball. And like it is really, really hard in the NBA, in the playoffs, to fight uphill in terms of star talent. Normally, the great series that you get are when the top end talent is equal. And then you're like, which role players are going to make shots? Which guy is going to have the bigger game 7 than the other guy, right? But when you have clear talent advantages, that's where series, you know, tend to be less competitive, or at least less up in the air. And the Clippers have been extremely competitive in this series. I mean, they're down 3-1, but considering that they have only had Kawhi Leonard for 2 of those 4 games and have had Paul George for 0 of the 4, the guys who have, I understand it's extremely disappointing and extremely frustrating for Clippers fans, and as a Clippers fan, it is for me too. But the guys who have been on the court in these last 2 games have overperformed what you could have asked them. To be this close in both of these 2 games, and, you know, maybe let go of the rope a little bit at the end today, but like, this game was legitimately in doubt well into the fourth quarter, the game prior, you know, up until the end. You know, they've done really what you could have asked of them to do, but the uphill talent war that they are fighting is, you know, in a single game, you could make something happen. In a 4 out of 7 series, it is really pretty unwinnable. I don't know that anyone has ever fought the uphill talent fight that the Clippers are fighting in a playoff series, you know, sans Kawhi, sans Paul George, against the caliber of stars that the Suns have. So I think that as frustrating as it is, like, this is almost, to me, is turning into, what was it, 2019 was the year against the Warriors. And that series was like, the Clippers played really well and overperformed expectations and lost in 6 to the Warriors. I think in these last couple of games against the Suns, they've played well. They've overperformed expectations. Rob's right. We got stuff to nitpick on and harp on, and I'm sure that we will. But the overall result for this Clippers team, I think, is, you know, I mentioned after the last game, like, playing a game that you can be proud of, even if you lose. And I think today the Clippers played, like, Russell Westbrook can take a lot of pride in his game today, even though the Clippers lost. And that's not nothing, you know, compared to Minnesota, right?
I do want to say quickly, like, the Clippers playing hard and well in this series does not absolve them of the regular season, and it does not make me any more desirous of having this particular roster and a lot of this team back. Like, I think they have exceeded expectations. They've played hard. They fought well. The locker room is clearly still in this, and I appreciate that. That does not kind of make up for all of the sins of this team and the roster construction and the coaching. Yeah, so I did just want to say that, like, they have impressed me to some extent, but like, this is still a team that I think needs major shakeups come the offseason.
Yeah, we're going to talk more about this in a second too. We're going to hit a break in a moment.
And in a week, I think.
And sure. In a week, this is going to be a long conversation. I can't imagine you leave this game, these games, particularly any sort of satisfied with the rotation at 4. Marcus Morris, who we'll talk about, played 24 minutes, went 3 for 13, 1 for 8 from deep, had multiple kind of ISO possessions in this game, that first half and that second quarter. Nico Batum just is not shooting anymore. He shot 1-3. I mean, of course, Nico Batum shoots the quality shots that he gets. And when you have Russell Westbrook, even Russell Westbrook's off ball and guys are just purposely leaving him, guys aren't going to need to rotate so much over to kind of capture Nicholas Batum in that corner. So he's barely shot all series. He's still been pretty okay defensively. Barely played today. Robert Covington played 8 minutes. And Morris played 24. The power forward continues to be the biggest point of contention on this roster. And today was another big failure there. Russell Westbrook was great, but 3 for 6 from deep. Hot night, shitty shooter, as I like to call them. He shot them with confidence. 17 for 29. That means he got a lot in the paint today at the rim. But Russell Westbrook doing this, having a 37-6-4 night and losing a game by 12 points, isn't the most surprising thing to me also in some respects. So I am not going to talk too much as far as what the Clippers are going to do in the offseason, all that stuff. But I generally agree with Rob that I don't think that this team should be absolved of their issues during the regular season and with roster construction. And that's going to be a point to be discussed in the future. Let's take a quick break. Come right back after this. All right, we're back. So, you know, I think after Russell Westbrook, Lucas, like you kind of mentioned, while there's this idea that I think the Clippers played really hard and played, I don't think any Clipper really played particularly well. I think Terrence Mann played all right today.
I love Terrence's game today. I wanted, every time that he was out there, I was like, why is this guy not playing the whole game?
I like Terrence's game out there. He played 30 minutes, but I didn't feel like, I mean, I think you've been on this as well. He should be starting because we don't like these trash shifts are exhausting. And the idea of playing a guy, you know, 15 game minutes in a row or whatever they are, is just not great. I've never liked that look for an energy type of guy like Terrence Mann is. I felt the whole series that Terrence could bring a little bit more towards the rim. He's done well shooting from deep all series. I think he's above 45% from three now. He might be around 50% actually from three after going 3 for 4 from deep today. And I think he was good today. I still have had some to be desired about Terrence trying to get to the basket a little bit more consistently. That's been my thing with him his whole career. But this is the sort of series where him doing it more so without Kawhi and Paul George would have been nice. He still played pretty well today. Russ played well. Aside from that, I can't say any Clipper really stood out for me. I think Plumlee had some moments out there. Eric Gordon had a few shots that went in, but otherwise felt kind of not very notable out there. Bones Highland passed up some threes. Aside from Russ and probably Terrence, nothing really stood out for me terribly much aside from the rotation issues. Outside of Westbrook.
I think like these guys are fighting their hearts out on defense. And like even these guys who are not good defenders, like Bones Highland, Eric Gordon, Norm Powell, they're all playing as good defense as you could possibly expect from them. And I think it is exhausting the hell out of them. They're playing bigger guys. They're playing more physical and stronger players, and they are just doing all that they can on the defensive end. And I just don't think that they have much left on offense. Like, I'm not saying that like they can't be playing better. Like they certainly can. But like, I it's hard for me to really say any of them are even playing badly. I mean, I think the one guy who was bad in this game was Marcus Morris. And like, I hate to dump on the guy. You know, he was 3 of 13. He was 1 of 8 from three. I think just about every single one of those was wide open. He was not good defensively. No. One of his buckets came at the very end of the game in a complete concession. He was basically 2 for 12 and was a minus 19 and would have been minus 21, I guess, without that layup.
Yeah, so airballed that three right before that layup.
Yeah. And like, he was bad. And like, again, I don't even necessarily blame him. Like, he didn't play for the better part of a month. And like, it's not his fault. And I do want to keep emphasizing that it is not his fault that Ty Lue keeps putting him in the starting lineup and playing him all these minutes. Like, he should not be playing at all, probably. And like, I think he's playing hard. Like, I'm not even faulting him for not effort or, you know, whatever. Like, I think he's fighting out there. Like, I think they all are. Yeah. He's just severely overmatched. And like his shot, like he made a couple, like he made that one mid-ranger in the three, but like a lot of his shots were just not even close. Like, I, you know, I, it's just, Yeah, I mean, I think that's it for me. Like, they're battling really hard on defense and they don't have much left on offense. Like, the games being close together, I think, has not helped the Clippers' legs. It has not helped the Suns either. Like, that's definitely a two-way thing. But again, like, I mean, Ty Lue was like, you know, we're going to throw lots of fresh bodies at them and stuff like that. Really, only 8 guys played actual minutes in this game. And that's not what I would call throwing a ton of fresh bodies at them. And, you know, we can talk about who should be playing and who shouldn't be playing and whether it would even matter. But I find it really hard to say any of these guys outside of maybe Morris had like a bad game in this one. Maybe Norm, I guess.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I do think that Norm had a bad game, but I also think it was like it's really easy to be forgiving of that, both in terms of obviously what Norm just did in game 3. And then, you know, having a 36-hour turnaround, trying to get his body right. I think that he physically didn't look ready for this game. Again, not blaming him for that. Just a guy who's been playing bench minutes, been playing fewer minutes, shouldering a superstar level load for a night, and then coming back 36 hours later. He's just like not as equipped to do it as like Devin Booker was. And we even saw, I mean, Booker and Durant probably struggle more in the first half of this game than we've seen all series. But yeah, so it was a bad one for Norm. I also think with Norm, like, the Clippers have no choice with who is available to them. Ty has no choice but to play Norm big minutes and hope that something good happens. The Marcus Morris one is you know, like, again, we don't want to harp on it, but it is the thing to be harped on after this game, right? It would be weird to ignore it in terms of, I thought with Kawhi out heading into game 3, I thought it made sense to give Marcus a try, because we've seen Marcus over his Clipper tenure, you know, it's the knee stiffness, right? He slows down, he moves worse and worse and worse, and then he takes some time off and he comes back and he's spry and he's active again. We've seen him, a lot of his defensive stuff is effort in terms of making that rotation to chip the big when Zoo helps on a drive. We've seen him bring that effort in the playoffs and not in the regular season. So in terms of like what Rob said about him taking a month off, I think that's the reason why you do go to Marcus and you say like, okay, you know, Kawhi's out, Nico hasn't hit a shot all series, let's see what Marcus can do for us. And so they went to him in game 3. And I think it was really obvious in his first half shift that the movement wasn't back. He wasn't moving well. He couldn't, like, that it wasn't working to have him out there. I wouldn't have even gone back to him for his, you know, his full 20 minutes in game 3. And I left game 3 thinking, well, you know, you just don't have the luxury of gambling on that again. And for him to come in and start this game, have a terrible first half, start the second half despite that terrible first half, all while like Terrence, you know, the biggest thing for me about it too is like Terrence Mann is basically having his minutes messed with in terms of, he's a guy who has been playing like 8 minutes in the first half and 16 in the second half. It's a lot easier to get him out there on the court for 30, 32, 36 minutes if he's playing the first 6 or 8 minutes of every half. And then he can sub out and sub back in instead of playing these long shifts and like being sort of artificially limited by the way the, you know, substitution patterns are set up. So not only did Marcus not deserve this chance today to start both halves, to play 25 minutes, to even come back and close the game. Like, I think the Clippers were down 8 with 3 or 4 minutes left, something like that. And it was like, you either make a run here or your season is virtually over, down 3-1 going back to Phoenix, right? Like, make a run here or your season is virtually over. And Marcus comes in as the small ball center. That doesn't, he just didn't deserve it. It wasn't warranted. It was not by his play all year, not by his play today. And him starting messed with the ability to get Terrence out there as much as the Clippers needed. But even Nico and Rocco, who aren't giving you a ton, deserve those 25 minutes more. So really, that one really upsets me, I think. And it's not a Marcus thing. It's not a Marcus laziness, blah, 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 whatever, right? It's about Ty's trust level in different guys and the fact that we haven't seen Rocco even really get a consistent chance in the rotation all year. And it's doubling down, tripling down, quadrupling down on a guy who, you know, it's like, how many times does it have to not work, right? And the answer is, I mean, I don't know if he's going to start game 5 or not, but like, we're running out of times for it to not work before it's just over, And I mean, you know, it essentially already is. So yeah, very, very, very frustrated at the Marcus Morris situation.
Yeah, you know, for somebody who's been called sort of a guy very willing to adjust, you know, Ty has been shown to have guys, and Marcus Morris is the guy that's really left. And this was just bad. I think playing him this many minutes, especially considering how bad his first half was, and then sticking with him in the second half and then closing with him in the second half, this is like really, really bad coaching stuff. And this is, in fact, I can't remember the last time Ty made a flub this badly in the playoffs. Granted, like, what are you going to do with this game? You're down your two best players. You're probably going to lose the series regardless. Like, it's tough to really single out this game, but the margins are just so slim without your two stars, and you're in this game, you're leading in this game in the third quarter, and everybody kind of knew what was coming. I mean, I think the small ball look with Morris at center was sort of an inevitability once he started.
But like, I don't even mind that, but like, you can't have him out there as the only
forward.
Like,
right.
If you're going to play him at all in the series, it has to be with either Rocco or Nico out there as well, to have like a true small ball unit that still has at least a modicum of size. Like, even again, and this is not Morris's fault, like, even the lineup season don't make sense. Like, there is probably a lineup where I think you could get away with playing him, but it's not him with four guards. It just, you, that he's not going to do anything on defense there.
Yeah,
I don't think with the way that he's moved in the last two games, I don't think there's a lineup where you could get away.
Probably not, but like, it's definitely not as the only guy who's not a guard out on the court.
But yeah. But I mean I do agree with you, Rob, that this like four guards and Marcus look that we've, you know, seen earlier in the year too. Like, even when Marcus was like the sort of best version of himself, it was a lineup that didn't make sense. I think we knew that Ty was going to super downsize today. After the success that had in the fourth quarter of game three, I was maybe a little worried that he would over rely on it. I think it's kind of it's the type of thing that it's a gimmick that can catch a team off guard, but not work in a big sample. Right. But to his credit, he stayed big for most of the game. He went to it at what was probably an appropriate time with a few minutes left in the game, down, kind of needing to spark something. It didn't work. You roll the dice with something like that, but going to it with Marcus just made no sense. I mean, it would have been better to just go five guard and have Gordon be the extra guy out there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I mean, Rocco too, it's just like, it's going to be a bummer when they go into game five and he like plays Rocco 25 minutes or something, and they lose, and it's like, now he got his chance, right? Like,
mm-hmm. KD scored a couple times on him, but like, just the sheer activity and energy difference between Rocco and Morris and even Nico is just so obvious. Like, he just makes so much more of an impact out there defensively. Like, yes, he's not great at point of attack, whatever. And he had like those two really nice passes, actually, like the driving dish to Plumlee, and then the in transition where he found man for a corner three. Like, Nico and Morris have not done anything like that at all this series. So I don't know.
He's the most of those three guys. You know, there's a lot of talk about what he doesn't do on offense that those other guys can do, but he's the guy most likely to actually put the ball on the floor and get his body past his defender to get downhill and make a little dump off pass or get a layup or something. Like, Nico never puts the ball on the floor like that. Mm-hmm. And when Marcus does, he doesn't get past his man. He just does a couple hesitation dribbles and takes a pull up shot. Right. So like, they're not to say that there aren't things like that. Rocco doesn't have his weaknesses. Of course he does. But, that is a dynamic in terms of driving a closeout to get to get a paint touch. He is the best of those three forwards at that specific skill.
Yeah, when that literally happened, I think I turned to Chuck Charles Mockler of Clips and Dip, and I said that, yeah, Marcus could never do what Rocco just did. And it also is worth mentioning that Robert Covington shot incredibly well from three to close the year. He shot over 60% since the All-Star break from three. So if you're trying to get a guy, which is insane, I had to like look at it twice, but if you're looking for a guy that's just willing to take shots, and he did, he got a couple shots up, it would be Covington. He'd be very much willing to do that. And I think it was the first defensive possession where KD had an acrobatic finish layup at the rim where there were like multiple deflections just in the one possession that was cleaned up by this kind of really tough shot by a tough shot maker. And you could feel his defensive presence like right away. It's just tough. Covington also has his problems. He is a little bit shot happy sometimes. He's a very streaky shooter, not great at point of attack. He's not quite like the answer. He's maybe the best look the Clippers could give, but he definitely would have his shortcomings as well that were probably hidden a little bit better because of this lack of foot speed on the Suns roster. But I really do wish he would get a proper shot. I mean, like,
well, Lucas, I mean, it's too late.
Right.
There's no such thing as it. Like the proper shot is roster revamp or like, I mean, I don't know what could happen, you know, in terms of, I have a hard time seeing Morris on the team next year. Nico, we'll see because of his age that, you know, there are different ways the Clippers could think about it or that he could think about his own career. So there's a possibility that Rocco has, you know, more of an obvious role in the rotation next year. There's definitely the possibility that the Clippers have a new coach that makes that happen, but there's no real chance to be left to be had in what remains this season. Like, I guess if the Clippers win game five on the road and PG and Kawhi come back and they come back from 3-1 and win the series, you could go into the second round and be like, okay, Rocco, you're going to get 20 minutes a game in these early games of the second round. But I mean, we all know that that's an unlikely outcome. And frankly, if it does happen, then the guys who are like, it's going to be because Marcus, who the guy that Ty trusts, makes a ton of shots. So of course he would keep getting those minutes. So it's not happening for Rocco this year. I don't know if there's any situation where it would under this coach, but
yeah, a real shame.
We'll see.
Let's take a quick break. Come right back. Talk about game five coming up after this. All right, we're back. Rob, game five, a lot of Clipper fans probably a little bit in the dumps right now, losing this game.
Turn to me to get you out of the dumps about the Clippers.
So I've turned it to you, Rob. I just know that you are a beacon of sunshine on this podcast in life. So Rob, what are you looking forward to in this game five coming up? Like how are we to approach it?
The Suns blew a 3-1 lead to a far inferior team literally last year. I'm not saying the Clippers are going to do that. But if that's your hope, and obviously they did not have.
Did they go up 3-1 or was it 2? It was 2-0, right? Wasn't it?
I thought they were up 3-1 too. Maybe they were. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. 2-0, 3-1, whatever. Yeah. Against the Mavs team that they really should have beaten, and let go of the rope, and just fell apart in other ways. And like this Suns team
Like everyone on the Suns get COVID though.
Yeah. Yes. Quiet. So I'm trying to be optimistic.
Okay. Sorry, Rob. Sorry.
COVID's still out there, man.
Yeah, like I think the Clippers have shown, even without Kawhi, like they can be competitive with the Suns. And like the Suns can come out two ways. They can either come out, we're up 3-1, we're at home. I highly suspect Paul George and Kawhi Leonard do not play in game five. This team is tired. They're without their two best players. We're going to come out and knock them down and win this game. They could also come out and be like, the Clippers are going to give up. We can loaf our way to a win. We don't really need to try that hard. And we've seen that this particular Clippers group will fight and will be able to punch against that kind of an attitude. I don't think the series is over. Like, wow. I think if the Suns had been better, yes. But like the Suns are
God, beatable. They've been so unimpressive.
Yeah. I think that's really the main takeaway from this series is nothing about the Clippers and everything about the Suns. Like, they have relied almost exclusively on Booker, Durant, and to a lesser extent, Paul. To do everything. Like, there's no way they're able to sustain this through another few rounds of the playoffs. I really don't think they can really even beat the Nuggets, even, you know. But anyway, getting ahead of myself there. The Clippers can beat this team, even on the road, especially if the Suns come out soft and expecting the Clippers to roll over and die. The Clippers just need to not do that. So if they come out hard, they come out with force, I think they could get a lead early, maybe even like a double-digit lead early. It would be helped if Ty Lue played the right guys. I would start Russ, Norm, Terrence, Rocco, and Zoo. I get that's a shooting and creation deficient unit. I don't really care. Like, Rocco will shoot threes. Terrence has actually taken a lot of threes. He's taken some tough ones in this series.
Yeah.
Like, those guys will shoot. You need Russ and Norm out there. And like, I think Zoo has like people were really dumping on Zoo. I thought Zoo's minutes in this one were like okay. Like
people don't
outside
know
of the first few minutes. Outside of the first few minutes where like the Suns were getting a million offensive rebounds, I thought his minutes were fine. I would be interested to see that lineup. That's not what we're going to get. I 100% guarantee that that is not the lineup we'll get. I just hope that there's no Marcus Morris. Morris should not play at all in game five, much less start. I think if the Clippers play the right lineups, they come out with the right attitude, I think they can at least make it another really competitive game. I think if the Suns really want to, I think the Suns should be able to win that one. Like, they're going to be home. That crowd is going to be going crazy. They can see the end of this series in sight, and they're probably going to want to get as much rest as possible before playing the Nuggets. We've seen the Suns team is, as Lucas said, thoroughly unimpressive, and they have a history of letting go of the rope a little bit. So I would say there's still like a glimmer of sunshine if you want to look for it.
Sunshine.
Hope, optimism, whatever.
We call him Robert Sunshine Flom.
Yeah.
Lucas, how are you looking forward to this game five?
I think Robert is right. I think that if there's one thing, and there's more than this that you could say for Russell Westbrook and the Clippers in the last few games, but if there is one thing, like if you had to just say one thing about them, it would be that the intensity and force is going to be there early on. The Clippers have actually been really good in first quarters in this series, or the Suns have been really bad. You know, to Rob's point, Rob and I both said the Suns have been really unimpressive, and that I agree with Rob. Assuming that they win this series, they go on to play Denver. I actually, based on this series, would flip my pick in that.
I think I'm leaning to that.
I would just lean back towards the Suns might pick at Denver's, like be set up to attack Denver's weaknesses, but Denver's just a better team top to bottom. All of that being said, I do think that I want to just sort of try to remind myself, I've been thinking about this the last couple of days. Teams don't just look bad in a playoff series. They are made to look bad by their opponents. And I think that the Clippers' activity levels defensively, and I think the Clippers, frankly, Devin Booker has been dominant. I think part of that is because the Clippers have been funneling the Suns to certain actions, and the Suns are just good enough to score at a rate that the Clippers without their stars can't keep up with. But like, I think the Clippers have been really, I think the Clippers have more or less controlled the way that these games have played. They just are at such a talent disadvantage that all they can do is shift it from like Suns win 90% of the time territory to, you know, Suns win 60% of the time territory. But I think that they have done that. And I think that like this, I don't think the Suns are going to go in and dictate how the games are played against Denver. But in terms of game five, the Clippers will come out with force. And I think that they've caught the Suns off guard basically in all four games. Like even in game three, they were tied after the first quarter. And that was the only time the Clippers haven't led after one. So I really don't think it's unreasonable to say that the Clippers will have a double digit lead in the first half. I mean, I think they might have had a double digit lead in the first half in three of the four games. The only way that doesn't happen is if Russ really struggles coming out. I just say that because the Clippers are really, really dependent on a high volume of Russ shot attempts right now. He's been really good in games two and three and four. If he comes out and he has, you know, just like a 2 of 9 first half, the Clippers will struggle to get that early advantage. But if they can get that early advantage, the Suns will come out in the second half of game five with that mindset. You know, they've been caught napping at the start of all of these games, but they'll come out in the second half. Denver will probably already have swept Minnesota by that point, and they'll be thinking, we got to get done with this and into the second round. We have to put this away. They'll be at home. Crowd will be behind them. Booker and Durant are Booker and Durant. We saw Chris Paul close out the Clippers in the Western Conference Finals a couple of years ago, right? Like they will bring a great second half in game five, I think. So what the Clippers have to do is first, they have to build that lead with the early intensity. Second, they can't just mess around. Like today, the biggest thing that cost the Clippers this game were their 8 second quarter turnovers, because the Suns had a really bad offensive first half and the Clippers ended up down one at halftime. They just didn't take advantage of it. Mm-hmm. They needed to build a 15 point lead, not be only down one. So the Clippers need to come out early, take that lead, kind of keep their foot on the gas as they switch into their bench and then back into their starters, which are transitions that they've struggled with in this series. And then in the second half, they have to make threes. And, you know, Rob mentioned earlier that that guys' legs aren't quite under them because of how much they're exerting themselves defensively and the minute load over multiple games. And I think that we see this a lot actually in the playoffs, is guys shooting kind of dropping off as guys are more and more physically exerted and losing their legs. But that's what the Clippers are going to have to do once they, if they can get that early advantage, then you just have to come out in the second half and, like, you know, Bones hits 5 of 7 threes in the second half or something like that, so that you can fend off the mid-range mafia, so-called attack of the Phoenix Suns. That's the formula. I think if the Clippers want to bring this back for another home game next Thursday, I think it's a really, really tough nut to crack. But, you know, I don't think it's that it's hopeless, but I think that if really anything goes wrong at any step of the way, down 3-1 with the Suns crowd behind them, with the two stars out, that's where, like, in a third quarter, in a fourth quarter, I think you could really see the Clippers kind of let go of the rope a little bit, which happens a lot to teams in elimination games in these situations. So I wouldn't hold it against them. But yeah, the early stages are going to be really important. And then they're just going to have to make threes like they haven't made so far in this series.
Yeah, I think that'll do it for this episode of the Lob the Diamond podcast. Leave us a nice 5-star review. Whatever platform you're on, 5 stars, 5 stars really helps. Some nice words too. Keep your heads up, everybody. Another playoff game still coming, and who knows? I agree with both you guys. I'm not very impressed by the Suns team. I did pick them to win the West coming into this season, into this series. I thought they would be my slight favorite, but I don't have them as my slight favorite anymore just because of how thoroughly and impressive they've looked. I think the Denver Nuggets are just better, and I thought that the Suns would be enough of a mismatch, particularly with a defensive center like Jokic and having all this mid-range talent, but I just don't think that that's going to be enough to just pull them over. I think I would pick the Nuggets, but we have another Clipper game coming up and hopefully more, and yeah, that's about it. Go Clippers!